on this episode of the C4SO podcast.
It's just the posture of, instead of asking people for help, it's widening our, the posture I'm going to have is widening my arms for how can this family become bigger and, you know, better, quite frankly, like deeper, not just in our understanding of what we believe, but deeper in our understanding of our giftedness and how we can help the body together. So I think first is just the posture of what that really is. It's not just a megaphone of help me, help me, help me.
Yeah.
But rather, you know, join the family. Let's do this together.
Hi, I'm Mickey Lowe.
Hi, I'm Bishop Todd. And welcome to the C4SO podcast. Hey, C4SO listeners, thanks for joining us today. I'm Bishop Todd Hunter. Regrettably, Mickey can't be with us today because she had a health issue that she needed to attend to be with a friend. So Mickey's being a loving friend and a great pastor today. But it's my joy to interview Addie Norman, who is the groups and hospitality pastor at Trinity Westside in Atlanta, and Cher Haynes, who's the business director. And this conversation emerges in the series we've been doing on practical ministry resources. And today we talk about what is the difference between recruiting volunteers, kind of negatively construed, versus creating the kind of atmosphere in which people are discovering their gifts from God and figuring out how those gifts can be used for mutual edification in a community of believers. So we walk through some really practical tips, but you're also given some heart-level conceptual ideas to help us to not only recruit volunteers, but to care well for them and to make sure it all works in a local church. So here's our conversation with Addie Norman and Cher Haynes. Hey, Cher and Addie, thank you so much for being on the C4SO podcast today. Our listeners can't see the screens. Where are you guys recording from?
We are in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yep. And are you at home or in the office or where are you?
We're about two offices down from each other.
Okay. So you're actually at work in your offices. Okay.
If I yelled across the hallway, Cher could hear me. So.
Okay. All
right. I can definitely hear you, Addie.
Well, that gives everybody a little sense about where you guys are. You know what? We're going to be talking about volunteers today and, you know, how they get called to do what they do. But I thought it might be a good way for us to get into this is, Cher, we'll start with you, give you a little heads up. Can you think of the moment where you first felt any kind of calling from God, where like God was recruiting you, you know what I mean? Not like us mm-hmm. recruiting volunteers in church. But can you think of a moment, and I'll ask Addie you the same thing, where you had that first instinct that God is calling me to do this or that thing? And tell us that quick story.
Oh, that's a great question. I think mine was, I can't exactly remember if it was eighth or ninth grade, but somewhere in that mm-hmm. age, I remember walking around like the nursery area of the church yeah. I grew up in. It was a church with the nursery kids. There was probably about 10 of them from like birth to pre-K age.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be around them. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds kind of maybe even creepy, but not just like, not just in the behind the scenes staring at them, but I really wanted to take care of them and,
yeah.
you know, them and things like
Beautiful.
That. And that was around the same time where, you know, there are just conversations around, oh, can I help with this? And they're like, actually, yes, we needed more volunteers. And you're in high school now.
That's so very cool. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very cool. Addie, what about you? What's your first memory of God calling you to something?
Yeah. Well, the first that comes to mind is just being in high school. And I don't actually remember an exact moment, but I mm-hmm. loved youth group growing up. I loved just the energy and fun and really, you know, felt a lot of camaraderie with my youth pastor growing up. And so I remember mm-hmm. being like, I want to do this. Like, I want to get the chance to do this. And yeah. so, I mean, in college, I ended up being my freshman year, I came back and volunteered with our youth group.
Okay, good. Got it. Yep. All right. So we're going to be talking about recruiting and managing, for lack of a better word, and nurturing volunteers today. So as we get into that, I'd like each of you share a bit about your work at Trinity. What are your roles there Addie, since you've had the floor, why don't you go first?
Okay. I am the groups and hospitality pastor. And so the way I think about my job is just how to cultivate both welcome and belonging at our church. And so a big part of my job is our neighborhood groups, and then also just hospitality, both in general, like how do we create a hospitable culture? And then also specifically with our hospitality teams, which is what we call our groups of hospitality volunteers.
Yeah. Okay, great. And Cher, what's your role at Trinity?
I'm the business director here. So I do a lot of administrative things. So finding systems that work for large groups of people, down to things like paying payroll or helping run the office and facilities, things like that.
Yeah.
All the behind the scenes, you know, fun, what I like to think of, the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Holds everything together is the truth of the matter.
I know every organization has somebody like that. That's absolutely for sure. All right. So, you know, maybe the second hardest thing besides having an evangelistic conversation, right? Like most people are scared to death these days of having an evangelistic conversation with somebody. Maybe the second most scary thing is trying to recruit somebody to volunteer to do something in the church, because we're all just so aware of how busy people are and stressed and dual incomes and kids playing soccer and dance and flute or, you know, whatever's going on. And so I would like you to start with maybe something that's a fun memory or something that you learned from about the first time you like swallowed hard and tried to recruit a volunteer. Cher, do you remember a time like that?
I do remember being in college helping out with a youth group, and the youth numbers were just expanding a lot. And I thought the helpers aren't exactly expanding as much. And I just remember thinking, do I ask parents? Do I ask other college kids? Who's interested in helping out with the middle schoolers and high schoolers? And anyway, you're exactly right. It was like, who wants to do this? And so, yeah, it was a really, really humbling feeling. Are you asking exactly how I did it or how I felt?
No, how you felt about it. Yeah. Like getting into that nervousness that most normal people feel.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because what if they say no? Did I ask the wrong way? Is it me they don't want to work with? You know, so many vulnerabilities there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's like being on a dating app or back in the day before they're in dating apps trying to, you know, talk to a girl or something. Okay, thank you. Addie, what about you? Can you remember a time when you first had to have the guts to talk to somebody about being a volunteer?
Yeah, well, it was my first job out of college. Was I did end up working with middle and high schoolers. Mm-hmm. So as mentioned before, that was a desire of mine for a while. And so a lot of my role was trying to both find and empower volunteers. And that was so hard for me because I hate the idea of like inconveniencing anybody or asking something or being a burden. And we'll probably talk about this later in the podcast, but I think over the years, because my job has been around volunteer recruitment for a long time, and I think it's had to be a reframing of like, I'm inviting somebody to receive something as well as to give something. But that was not the way I felt at the beginning. It just felt like I was like inconveniencing, burdening somebody.
Right. Yep. I think that's right. That gets it right at the heart of the fear that I think, again, 9 out of 10 normal people would be dealing with. So I want to say something here that gets us into this topic, but keeping it at a high level here for a moment, and make a couple of assertions and then have you ladies respond to those assertions. There are like best practices for recruiting, of course. But I want to say that how we recruit for church roles actually shapes the culture of a church. In other words, our recruiting could be just a smidge manipulative, like, right, using emotional manipulation or guilt or something. Or it could be sort of overly tricky, or I don't know. But that how we recruit is actually as or more important than the tactics or strategies or good, you know, best practices of recruiting. So for me, one of the biggest examples of this is that we don't want to turn the church into a volunteer organization. Like, we're not the Red Cross, as great as the Red Cross is, but you know what I mean? We're not, mm-hmm. we're not that. We're not a non-religious homeless shelter or something. We're the body of Christ. And a part of discipleship is helping people to identify and learn to use their gifts in ways that make sense to them and it's useful to the church and fruitful, joyful to them. So first, I guess I want to ask you, ladies, and whoever wants to go first can go first. Do you think I'm right in that big assumption that how we go about recruiting people and the kind of culture that creates is as or maybe more important than the tactics of recruiting? Cher, I can see you shaking your head. What are you thinking?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The how, the what you say, the what your definition of volunteering even is. When you're trying to recruit, you want to know exactly what you're asking, you know, and yes. I just want to firmly agree with you. Yes.
Yeah. So have you seen kind of bad examples in your lifetime of like volunteer recruiting that isn't shaped by a more body of Christ helping people discover their gifts? Or are we kind of making this up? I feel like I've seen it a lot in my career, but I'm a lot older than you are.
Yes, I think for me personally, my personality is, if I see something that needs to be done, I'm not going to ask for help. I'm going to zero in and do it myself.
Yeah, yes.
And so as a church attendee, if I see a need, I'm not going to get a crew of my friends to help. I'm going to do it myself. And yeah. I'm not going to put a commitment end date on it. I'm just going to do it forever and burn out accidentally. And, you know, and so if someone's recruiting me, I think what's the most success that I've seen is when it's clear what the position is.
Yeah.
And, you know, when that clarity and you can't do this on your own, we've got to have a team involved, things like that. Just the recruiting is so important for clarity and expectations.
Yeah. Addie, what are your thoughts about this? The difference between like a culture of volunteers versus a community of people who are trying to discover their gifts and use them.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think about, I mean, because we kind of had a big shift, I guess, 3 years ago in how we talked about serving in the church. And it's really, it was speaking to exactly what you're talking about. And we used to like, a lot of our searching for volunteers was when we were in desperate need. So it was like on the stage, kind of our kids ministry, we're falling apart. Like we need to, and almost like this pulling teeth method. And I don't think we were doing that intentionally or like manipulatively. It just was the way that we were recruiting volunteers. And so anyways, we made a big shift into even how we talked. Like now we don't actually use the language volunteer, but we call them teams.
Yes.
And the way we think about it is really around this idea of like family, that when you are brought into a church, you're actually brought into a family. And kind of like in my family, it's like we share the load and do the dishes and take out the trash.
Yeah.
That's actually like empowering and makes us feel like we're a part of something that is really the same invitation that we would have for folks in our church is like, if Trinity is your home, we want you to be a part of it and be a part of making church happen for others that come to our church. And I think that was a big shift. And it kind of, I guess, like I was talking about before with a few minutes ago, it's like the shift of I'm actually inviting you into something and not just asking something of you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good distinction. Okay, ladies, we're going to do kind of fastballs here. When I was really young, like 22 or something, and doing my church planting internship back in 1978, 1979, I remember learning a pattern for this that I've kept in the back of my mind for all these years. And so we'll go through these words one at a time, but this episode of our podcast is in our practical series. And so what I want to do for our next few minutes here together is give people really practical tips about How do you identify volunteers? How do you recruit them? How do you train them? How do you deploy them? How do you monitor what they're doing? And not just use them, but nurture them so that we retain people well, and that actually those volunteers or those people using their gifts in the body of Christ reproduce themselves. So let's start with identify. Cher, give us some tips about how, in a gift-based sort of way, and trying to notice people's experiences, their passions, their maturity levels, et cetera, how do you guys go about identifying people who might be called into a certain task?
I will tell you, for me, this is probably the hardest part because it's the most vulnerable, you know, to say like, oh, you have a gift in this, or I see that you have experience in this. I think the first point for that, for identifying, it starts with relationships. Mm-hmm. You got to know the people that you're around. And then, you know, like if you think about your closest friends, you know what their giftedness is, you know what their passions are without them having to like fill out a form and tell you. And so I think that's the first step, is getting to know your people in a relation, in a just in a genuine friendship kind of way.
Mm. Yeah. Otherwise, people can feel like we're just using them, whether we intend to or not. It can feel very transactional, very utilitarian, where you're right. If it comes out of as much relationship as we can get, it's a much stronger ask. You know, it's a much stronger identifying of who might match well at a certain place. So, Addie, speaking of an ask, the next word here is recruit. And if we're going to do it in the basis we've been talking about, you know, making an ask based on what we understand to be people's gifts, as Cher was just saying, having some understanding of their calling, but also how that works, you know, how that interacts naturally with the church. Give people the tip or a couple tips that come to your mind about actually making the ask, you know, the actual moment of recruitment.
Well, in this big shift we made from calling our volunteers teams, one of the hopes of doing that was like unifying all of our volunteers to be called the same thing. Because in the past, we would make these asks and recruit all separately. Yeah. So it's like we have one Sunday, we'd be announcing that we need kids volunteers. Then two Sundays later, it's like, oh, we need hospitality volunteers. Yeah. And then there would be a need for prayer volunteers. And so we decided to bring unity and like connection between all of our different volunteers. So they're all called teams. And we do like one big recruiting in August where we kind of say, like, if you call Trinity Home, we really want you to be on a team. And that allows people to like look at our list of, we have around, I think it's 10 teams at this point, and kind of asking them, like, we're a body with many parts. So look on our teams page and search and see, like, do you feel led to do kids ministry or youth ministry or hospitality? Mm-hmm. And then it helps. Like there's some times where we have to identify people's giftings, but then other times where we're like asking people to identify their own giftings. Right. And so that's really helped us because it's allowed us to like recruit for everything at the same time. That makes sense.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. Like really smart.
And just communication wise, it was a helpful shift because if we need kids volunteers, we can say on a Sunday, like we actually do, we're in need of more kids volunteers. As you know, if you look on our teams page, there's all different ways to serve the church. One is the kids, or it allows us to like advertise for all of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a super great and helpful point, Addie, because I think you guys did two important things simultaneously at Trinity when you did that, is you made a move towards really beautiful biblical words like family or emotionally or psychologically affirmative terms like teams versus, hey, we're trying to get you to volunteer for our organization. So that sounds like a super smart move that I hope all of our listeners will pick up on. All right. So there's identity, our identifying people. I talked a bit about recruiting them. Cher, let's think next about training. What are you guys doing to make sure that people are prepared for what they might say on a form? Like to Addie just said, if somebody said, I want to be a greeter Like, how do you make sure this person has decent emotional intelligence and decent social skills, or, you know, whatever a role might need, so that they're actually ready to succeed, right? What I've seen happen so many times over my career is somebody says they want to do something. We're desperate, so we say yes. And it's only later we find out that they don't really have the skill or the aptitude or the gifts to do it. So what are you guys doing to keep those things together, that what somebody wants to do, they're well-trained to do?
Yeah, I love that question. To piggyback off of what Addie just said about the teams. So in August, we have what's called a teams kickoff. We've been doing this the last few years. And we get all the teams together in a room and we say, okay, this is the launch of the new teams year. You guys have committed for a year and a lot of, you know, celebration. Let's get this year started. Then everybody splits off into their groups for their super practical. Mm-hmm. This is how you say hello to someone.
Or the
kids ministry is saying, listen, this is quite frankly, take a kid to the bathroom. This is how you change a diaper. And that's when they do a lot of actual discernment is during that team's kickoff evening when they're breaking out into groups for specific training. This is actually, just to pull a little plug for Ministry Safe and the sexual harassment prevention training that we have at C4SO. This is also the time for that. So we know in August, everyone's doing the Ministry Safe, the sexual harassment prevention training, and this team's kickoff where they're doing hands and feet trainings for exactly how things get done. It's a one-time thing per year. And then, of course, people can sign up to be on a team throughout the year. And then we'll do like a middle of the year training as well, specifically in the kids department is what comes to mind the most, because there is so much, you know, safety things to know as well as like social skills of how to talk to a two-year-old. Yeah. So they do trainings throughout the year, but primarily we focus on all the trainings are happening at one big time all together.
Yeah, that's super helpful, Cher. And I think the point that we want our listeners to get from this bit on training is, like you said, like even just teaching somebody how to say hello or learning to notice people as they come in, like somebody walking in the door ash and white because they just heard their dad has 2 days to live is very different than the person walking in bubbly who just got a raise at work and blah, blah, blah. So you're right. I want all of our listeners to just hear the detail in which you might want to think through how to train people to do different things. And it's not to be controlling so much as it is to make sure they're prepared to succeed and to actually do well at being a greeter, as you said, changing diapers, whatever. So that's super good. Thank you, Cher.
Yeah,
all right, Addie, let's turn to deploying. So one of the things that I've seen be frustrated over the years is we can have talented, skilled, gifted, called people who maybe even go through some training, but they're never actually given meaningful work. And so here now maybe we're talking about, quote, volunteers on a higher level, like a team leader. At Trinity, I don't know, but I'm assuming at Trinity, those team leaders are probably paid. But and maybe some are and some aren't. But a lot of churches, team leaders aren't paid. That's, quote, a volunteer position. But that's like seriously sophisticated work to lead a team like that. It's different than just noticing how to be warm as a greeter or something. So how do you go about deploying people, giving them meaningful work, making sure they have a clear job description, making that they know how that job description works with others, and how I've always just kind of loved this imagery about how parking cars is actually not just about putting on an orange vest. It's actually about hospitality. So what are you guys doing to help people see how this all works together and they're given actual meaningful work to do?
Yeah. Well, I guess a couple different ways. One thing I thought about is at that team's kickoff, we have the first about hour, everyone shares a meal and our church leadership speaks to all the different teams. So we have the worship team, hospitality team, kids team, youth team, all in one room. And we have like our kind of lead pastors getting to speak that value to people of hospitality. I mean, really, we would say every team, like kind of what you were saying about parking cars, we would say that about worship volunteers, kids team, like it's all hospitality. So So that was one thing I thought about. But I do think what you're talking about has to happen again and again and again. And I mainly can speak to hospitality because that's kind of my lane. But we have volunteer, and I know I try not to use that word, but we have volunteer team leaders for our hospitality teams for each week. And part of what they do is before they kind of head out to do their work, the team leader is like casting the vision that you're talking about, like reminding people, hey, when you're smiling at someone opening a door, you actually are displaying to them in a small way that they are known and seen, as we know is true of each person that walks into the building. But I think that that has to be done on a continual basis because it's so easy to forget for so much of kind of monotonous things that have to get done. It's easy to forget the meaning of why we're doing it.
Yeah.
And all right. Can I add something
yes,
to that?
Yeah, share, please.
Just to piggyback off of what Addie said. So the volunteers before their, or the teams before their shift, we meet about 30 minutes before the service and we do a lot of storytelling. You know, hey, this is what a parent said in the kids ministry, or, hey, this is what happened last week. You know, a wonderful greeter conversation, just to remind them that the story is bigger than themselves and we all get to be a bigger part of it. So including the storytelling just before the shifts begin is always empowering, I feel like.
That is a big idea. If we could have a yellow marker on a podcast, we would highlight that. That's a great, great tip, Cher. Thank you. All right. So we've talked some about how to identify the gifts and callings of God in people, how to ask them to participate in a family, in a team based on that gift and calling. Talked a bit about training them so that they're prepared to succeed in their role. We've just talked about how to actually deploy them in meaningful ways. And again, a big mistake that I've seen over my career is then like, okay, see you later. And there's not a lot of keeping in touch. There's not a lot of caring for the volunteers because we assume the volunteers are caring for others and not giving people a place to even ask questions like, hey, I tried to deal with a toddler in the hallway and it went really south. And what, like, is there something I could do different or whatever? So we want to make sure that we have times for feedback, for questions, for hearing other people's observations or concerns, their thoughts and feelings about how they're working. So what do you guys do to keep in touch with your volunteers, Cher?
That was for me, you said?
Yeah.
I actually just had a meeting with one of our senior leadership team members today. We were looking over the course of the next year, and we just circled different months in the year, and we said, checking in on our volunteers, checking in on volunteers. I know it sounds, you know, it kind of takes the heart and soul out of it, but putting it on your calendar to check in with your volunteers. Mm-hmm. And I know it doesn't sound, feel it out, you know, but it's literally just an alarm bell every other month, you know. And of course, if there's something that's stirring in you that I want to check in on this particular person, obviously, but it also doesn't hurt just to have a literal calendar meeting that says check in with the volunteers today. So, and our ministry departments do it a little bit differently. There's like our youth leaders. They actually go on a retreat one or two times a year, depending on the year. The youth leaders get together and do that. Some of our our Bible study teaching leaders will get together and have dinner together, and you know, just truly check in on each other. And then there's other positions where it's more of a like quarterly email that, you know, that we send out and we say, hey, how are things going, you know, in your lives personally and also in your work with the church?
Yeah. Now, I mean, Trinity is obviously a very big church, so it'll have different life and rhythms than a church of 120 or something. But I think your thing about putting things on the calendar, Cher, is not like an organizational tactic. I think it's more like putting prayer time on our calendar or time for the gym, because a calendar is really a statement about value and priorities. And so if you're listening and, you know, you're leading a church of 75 or 120, you might not have to put it on your calendar in the same way in an organizational point of view, but just putting a tickler that says, hey, once a day, you know, if we have 30 volunteers in our church, I'm going to call one of them a day. something mm-hmm. like that. So some mechanism that's practical, it doesn't mean it's not really loving. It's a way of making practical what will be a loving conversation. And so I agree with you. We need, this needs to be calendared. It's not likely to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great one. All right. So Addie, this one is sort of in the same lane, so to speak. As we're monitoring our team members, and maybe another way to say that is being attentive to. In fact, I think I like that better. It's more words, but being mm-hmm. attentive to the people who are serving on various teams. What do you guys do to make sure that there are times when we're doing things for volunteers, not just sort of extracting what they're doing for the church, but we're actually doing things for them and making sure maybe in their specific ways that they keep growing in Christ, whether that's serving on the worship team or, as you said, changing diapers in the toddler room or whatever. What do you guys do to make sure you nurture your team members?
Yeah, that's so good. And honestly, I feel inspired because I'm like, oh, I can think of ways that we could grow in this, or I at least could with hospitality, our hospitality team. Like our hospitality teams go to lunch once a semester. I really, who I feel like could give great answers to this are our kids and youth team, because I feel like they do such a good job. Like Cher was saying, with our youth leaders, I know that they have like systems in place where parents are investing in and pouring into our lovely. Youth leaders, knowing that like mentorship is so important, and the retreats that are happening.
All right. So we've got people working now, hopefully according to their gifts. We're being attentive to them, nurturing them. And then the next thing is retaining volunteers, like ensuring that people are having a good experience, that we're being responsive to them, that they're given good, clear, timely communication. They're given breaks, so you know they don't have to do something 52 times a year. Cher, say a bit about how you guys work to make sure that you can retain team members.
Similar to the first one that we mentioned about identify, this one is a close second for me. For there, you know, if I were to say the perfect sentence right now, you know, about mm-hmm. how to retain a volunteer, man, that would be gold. I can tell you what we try to do, mm-hmm. and it varies on the different ministry departments. And so if we're at a church that only has one service, mm-hmm. and you're in the kids department, you're going to miss out on the adult service, you know. Right. And so we want to make sure that if you're volunteering for kids, that we are not putting you on a shift that's more than once a month. There's an emergency, then we'll do twice a month. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it depends on the team. So we have communion teams, and there's communion folks who serve communion every single week. So I'll speak to that group more specifically. So if you've got a communion team that comes every Sunday and they're serving, at the end of the year, we have a time of check-in where we say, we're, you know, leading up to this, going back to this team's kickoff, and we say, hey, do you want to be a part of the communion team? Or do you want to take a break for a year? And we don't take it personally if they want to take it, you know, mm-hmm. take a step back for a little bit. And then those conversations we'll kind of hear pretty quickly about what's going well, and you know, how they've had a good experience, what things could be better. So there is an annual time when we really ask this question and give that communication. I wish we did it a little more often, but that's our scheduled time, is once a year.
Yeah. Well, I hear you saying a couple of important things that I'd like our listeners to take away. Is one is, I hear you saying, make sure a role is doable. So we don't want anybody missing church four times a month, right, to work in the kids ministry. But like you said, maybe one on, three off makes it doable. And then also, as you were talking, I thought that what's doable changes in people's seasons of life.
Absolutely.
Like if you're maybe in a gap year between high school and college versus in college or graduate school, or married with your first kids, or you're, you know, in the throes of four kids under 10, or if you're an empty nester, that doability is attached to stages of life, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I would say also doability gets attached to kind of emergencies of, well, so-and-so had to have surgery, or our kid has come down with a serious virus or something, and we're out of the picture for a month. So yeah, so retaining volunteers, I think, is will come out of a good sense of being attentive and nurturing, so that we're aware of what's really happening in people's lives. All right, last thing, Addie. In an ideal world, our volunteers would be reproducing themselves. In other words, they would be having good experiences. They would hear each other sort of testifying about that. Like, it's so fun to work on the communion team. You know, we get there in the morning and we have coffee and we kind of catch up with each other and, you know, we do what we do. And that their good experience, along with the testimony of their good experience, seems like a really important thing, because they sort of become recruiters themselves. Can you talk a bit about that?
Totally. And I think it's something to like capitalize on and remember, is the encouragement to people to bring others in. Because I think sometimes someone might love working in the nursery, but it might not have crossed their minds to tell their friend to do it. And so it's like remembering to nudge them to say, like, don't forget to help us grow our teams. And then this past year, we had a great response. Our comms team created these Instagram stories that we also posted on Facebook. And they interviewed a different person from each team. So then when we were doing that August big team launch, there was someone from the different teams, like a kids volunteer, youth volunteer, hospitality, that are getting to share, like, this is why this has been meaningful work for me. And we saw great response from that. So
That makes perfect sense. Thank you. All right, well, we're running out of time, so we need to start landing this plane. So picture yourself that you've maybe had just been asked by a clergy member or the vestry or something to be in charge of volunteers in your church of 100 or 150 or something like that. What would you say, and somebody had called you to ask for advice, what would you tell them would be like the first step in creating a better culture for recruiting volunteers?
I think the words that keep coming to my mind, or the phrases, is it's just the posture of, instead of asking people for help, it's widening the posture I'm going to have is widening my arms for how can this family become bigger and, you know, better, quite frankly, like deeper, not just in our understanding of what we believe, but deeper in our understanding of our giftedness and how we can help the body together. So I think first is just the posture of what that really is. It's not just a megaphone of help me, help me, help me. But rather, you know, join the family. Let's do this together, which I know is not a practical, super practical.
No, that's actually, I was just sitting here thinking, you don't need help. That's a great answer. It's fantastic.
But yeah, it's just a posture of we're feasting together. We're playing together. Mm-hmm. We are cleaning house together. We are taking care of each other. Posture.
Yeah, that's a very different culture than using people as volunteers.
Correct.
It's very different. It's actually, I love that answer. Addie, for people who are listening to this and maybe want to know how to take a next step or learn and grow, what are the kinds of things you've done to grow and being a better person working with team members?
I mean, I'm such like a relational person that some of this has been cultivating ideas with talking to people from other churches. So that like one-on-one really, I mean, exactly what you're getting to do is like talk with us. And that might be an idea someone gets from us. That's typically the way that I gather a lot of my ideas, is just talking and even trying to visit. I mean, one thing that I've really hoped to do is visit other churches. And so 2 weeks ago I went to a church down the street, and on my work time was like, I'm going to take a Sunday off and go to that church. And I went early and watched the way they did hospitality and the way that they did their coffee and the way they greeted people. And it was so informative. And so that's something I hope to do more of, because I think we learn so much from seeing the way other churches do things.
Yeah, it's a great answer, Addie, thank you. Okay, ladies, I would love to leave our listeners with a word of encouragement. So, Addie, share, again, picturing whether it's somebody in kind of a department in a big church, like somebody who's doing youth or children in a big church, or as we were just talking about, the person who's kind of in charge of volunteers, period. in a smaller church, I would love to leave these people with a word of encouragement. So ladies, help me do that.
Yes, I think the reminder that we're actually just stewards. And so the work I'm doing is stewarding something for the family of God. And I think that removes myself from the picture, because I think that whole like, ugh, I'm asking people to do too much for me makes it about me, you know, and it's that reminder.
Yeah.
I'm inviting someone to be a part of the good work that God is doing is such a shift of mindset that adds more value and significance to the work you're doing when you're recruiting volunteers.
Yeah, beautiful. Cher?
My word of encouragement is probably it's coming from a little bit of a negative tone, I guess, which is this isn't really that easy. You know, there's if I know the secret formula, then it's going to work. I think about I have elementary school kids, and their PTA is like, hey, can you do this hour shift? Can you do this hour shift? Can you do this hour shift? And, you know, I'm like, oh, man, they have like the worst job for begging people to volunteer. And so it really is kind of tough to come to church and really change that mindset of we're not just in a megaphone and begging people for an hour here and there. We really are saying, let's come and be a part of this.
Yeah. So I hear you saying that, that's not like easy, as if there's some magic bullet or special recipe, but something if we could just stick to the things that we've talked about today, just getting a little bit better at identify, recruiting, training, deploying, monitoring, nurturing, helping to retain and reproduce, and just learning bit by bit. And I would say, if you're stuck and don't know what to do, just start with the golden rule. In the process of recruiting, deploying, don't ever do to anybody what you would not want done to you. And don't ever fail to nurture and help people that you would want done for you. Like if you're stuck and don't know what else to do, go to the golden rule or go to the great commandment, and you're likely to be just fine. After that, it's really just skill sets that you can pick up as you go along. All right, ladies, thank you, Addie and Cher. You've been a great help to our C4SO family today. We appreciate you very much.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the C4SO podcast. If you like what you heard, please feel free to share this episode and subscribe and leave a review. It helps us to get the word out. Thanks.